The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
At 9:25 this Thursday morning, great to have you with us. I'm joined now in studio by Mark Boyle. He made international headlines when he decided to live completely without money, and now he's given up much more. For nearly 3 years, he's been living off the grid out in the west of Ireland, and he's written about his experience in his new book, The Way Home, Tales from a Life Without Technology. What an intriguing prospect. Good morning, Mark. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What does that expression, off the grid, mean?
I think it means different things, different people. Most commonly is kind of described as not having, like, not being connected to mains electricity. Mine thing's a bit different in that I don't have any electricity at all. So I don't have any internet, don't have any mobile phone, don't have a washing machine. None of the things that we take for granted.
No fridge.
No fridge.
No running water.
No running water.
No flushing toilet.
No flushing toilet.
No washing machine.
No washing machine.
No phone.
No phone.
No watch.
No watch. No clock.
No tin foods.
No tin foods. A lot of stuff.
What's left?
Well, what is left? It's a good question. I think life is left. I think when we kind of forget sometimes that when we accept one thing, we reject another thing. I think when we bring in all of these technologies into our lives, we're rejecting a lot of life.
But if running water is that a technology?
I think the technologies are the pipes, the pumps, the things that get water to our taps.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, the water itself isn't technology. Water itself's life.
Well, let's get down to the kind of the nitty gritty stuff. Like, for example, showering and hygiene and that kind of thing. So, what do you do for cleaning yourself?
It depends on the time of year. We'll say summertime, I have a wash in the lake where I go fishing. In the winter, sometimes in a wee tin bat I have in front of the fireplace. Often a jug of water. I'm out in the freezing cold. I just pour the water over my head.
And that'll do nicely.
Do the job. Yeah, it's very enlivening, actually.
I would imagine it is. Bracing is the word I'd...
Bracing.
And the water you use is procured from...
So one of my first jobs in the morning is to go and collect spring water. So I'm quite lucky in that we've got a spring at the end of the lane. So I go down with a couple of demijohns, pick up spring water, and then bring it back and...
And that'll do, as I say.
That's the job.
Where part of the country are you in?
I'm in County Galway, just on the border with East Clare.
Okay, and can you describe your setup for us? Where do you live, or what class of domicile is it?
Yeah, it's a 3-acre small holding, kind of half wild. I kind of let it go as much as possible, give as much to the kind of nature as I can. On that, there's a farmhouse, which I first moved into when I got there, and we have a free hostel, which every week people just rock up to and stay for free for a night, sometimes 6 months, depending on if they're personable.
Yes, indeed. We'll come back to that, but just in terms of your own setup. Yeah,
I've got a cabin there, which I built out of straw bales and round wood, and got a green roof. It's just a room mezzanine for a bedroom. And yeah, it's kind of like a little hobbit house in some ways.
Okay, nicely described. And what do you do for food then?
Food. So I try to live from the landscape around me, which this time of year actually is quite limited. It's kind of a lot of kale, potatoes every day.
Yeah.
If I go fishing and catch pike, then that's obviously a good source of protein. Like, pike's one of those ones that most people in the country think you can't eat pike.
Yeah.
You know, it's the neighbours around me think it's a dirty old fish, you know.
Yeah.
But actually, pike's very good. It's quite big, you know, so one pike will do 3 or 4 people for an evening.
So you're happy enough to eat a lot of the same thing over and over again. That's part of your diet now.
Well, whether I'm happy or not, it doesn't matter. I have to eat the same thing over and over again. So yeah, but I really like the kind of regularity of the meal. You know, it's mostly potato, pike and salad.
What's your approach to clothes?
Clothes is one thing which in the book I'm really kind of... I kind of described that this is a journey for me. It's, you know, I think in 30 years time, I'll have all the skills for all the different elements of what makes up my life, but it's kind of something I'm learning as I go along.
So you're wearing a t-shirt and a lumberjack shirt this morning, and you've got a coat over the chair behind you.
Yeah.
Does it annoy you that you have to buy those clothes?
A little bit, yeah. Like,
why?
I get them all secondhand and stuff. Well, it's kind of almost like a sense of failure that I haven't been able to... Like, I've made some of my own stuff. Like, I use buckskin. So with roadkill deer, I'll skin the deer and then make buckskin out of the...
So if you find a deer on the side of as you say, roadkill, you'll take it by the hooves and bring it back to the cabin?
Yeah.
And what'll you do with it?
I'll hang it, skin it, butcher it, eat it. Then I'll go through the whole process of the skinning, you know, turning the skin into a buckskin.
And where did you learn those skills?
Just as made it up as went along.
You're joking.
Yeah.
You learned how to flay a deer by just...
Yeah, the odd book and stuff, and I'd ask the odd neighbour, you know, if they have any experience with some of these things. And we really forget that people in the old ones in rural Ireland have a lot of these skills anyway. You know, we forget to tap into their knowledge.
Of course, yeah, because you're living a life that plainly did exist before you know, technology came along.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about the different things because it throws up so many questions. When I ask you about clothes, for example, and you talk about the sense of defeat, is it because there was a footprint, as you say, left by getting the clothes to the country? And is it that sort of, is that the
just
argument?
It's a little bit about that, but I think it's actually changed for me in that it's more about my connection to landscape, you know? It's like I want to be fully immersed in the place where I'm from.
Yeah.
So... I want to feel like I can meet my needs from that place around me. I think that's a really important part of life, you know, that sense of connection to... Like, we talk about connection these days in the sense of Wi-Fi. Like, you know, like yeah. You know, that's how we think of the word connection.
Yes.
Where I feel connection is about connection to place, connection to people.
Do you drink tea or coffee?
No tea or coffee.
No, you're not.
Herbal tea from herbs in the garden.
That you've made yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Would you have a pint?
I have the odd pint, yeah.
You have a weekly pint, don't you?
I have a weekly pint with a friend of mine. He's actually a writer as well. He lives just the other side of a wee village. And we meet up on a Tuesday night for a pint, a bit of a chinwag, give him a chest sometimes.
Yeah. And what's your tipple?
If I'm in a pub, if Beamish is available, I'll have Beamish. But,
yeah.
But otherwise Guinness.
And does it bother you then, for example, that the truck had to bring the keg to the pub, and there the keg has pipes and technology and there's lights on in the pub, and is it a bit of a contradiction to the ideal utopia that you seek?
I think it's definitely a contradiction in that obviously these things, you know, the place I go into is obviously using some of the technologies that I've kind of rejected.
Yeah.
But I think it's also important to deal with reality as it is where you are, you know, and I don't pretend to live in a world where, like a primitive world where these things don't exist. And it's very easy to kind of isolate yourself by not engaging anything. Like I go up to mum and dad's, for example, and up in Donegal, you know, sometimes, and if I, you know, they have the lights on in the house, you know, if I didn't go into the house to see them, you know, because the lights are on, it would be a very difficult life.
And if your mother or your father served you up a nice roast leg of lamb or something on the Sunday when you're up there, would you eat it or would you refuse because of the oven?
Yeah, I think it's wrong to refuse food, you know, from anybody, you know.
Okay.
And I really respect.
But are you grumpy eating it because it was used in oven?
Nah, not at all, no. I've made peace with that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I used to 10 years ago when I was a 28-year-old and... You know, that kind of different spirit, you know, you're a young man idealistic and you get a bit older and you think actually life's too short to be kind of giving yourself a hard time about all these different things. Yeah.
And how old are you now, can I ask?
Just going on 40 actually next month.
So the good life is working for you. You look well on it, in fairness to you. Tell me about that idea of the folks, because you don't have a phone. And contact-wise, how do you keep in touch with friends or family?
Yeah, like actually giving up the phone was quite a difficult one. I was very aware of the impact, just not on myself, but on like not being able to talk to mum and dad.
Yeah.
You know, because I know they missed that. But it's interesting. Over time, we just, we send letters and it's really lovely. Like my mum sometimes says she kind of races out to the post box in the morning to see if there's a letter come, you know. And it's kind of, it feels quite nice. It's the same, a little bit like love letters, you know. It's a difference in a love letter and an email.
For sure.
You know, and
there's also something so personable about the written word, and there's more heart and soul in it.
Yeah.
And you get that. That's your way of communication. It's actually lovely.
Yeah, like sometimes, like a love letter, sometimes you go and you sit in a bit of window and read it three times, you know. It's not very often you read an email three times.
For sure.
So,
you had a girlfriend for most of the time you're writing the book. Did she live with you in the cabin?
Yeah, we lived together for 3 years.
Yeah.
Then the middle of last year, we broke up.
Was that anything to do with the isolation that you were going?
It would be oversimplistic to say it was to do with just the way of life. Like, I think she's a very kind of, like, she's a dancer and a performer and stuff, you know. She's very content in big festivals with lots of people around.
Well, there's a different world she was in.
A different world.
Yeah, but she lasted 3 years with you and you with her, and that's not bad going.
Not bad, yeah. I think in the end, I think she just needed to have more people around, you know, and kind of rural Ireland who's suffering, you know, and that there's a kind of a drain of young people towards cities. Mm. That's where the work is. So,
but you've met someone since.
Yeah, I've met a lovely woman just in the middle of last year.
And can I ask you, and again, you don't have to answer this here, but how?
It wasn't on Tinder, obviously.
Well, of course it wasn't, but that's where everyone goes, I can't find anyone on Tinder.
Yeah.
But, so how did you manage in the...
Well, that's a good question, actually. I think it's really important just to live your life as you feel compelled to live it yourself.
Sure.
And the universe is a kind of funny way of working itself out if you just do that. So I went to the teach on a course in Clochjordan, which is like an eco-village down in Tipperary. And she happened to be on the course.
And so it began.
So we had a pint in the pub one evening and she came up for a few days to visit and went from there.
You see, part of me thinks it is the most romantic life that you're leading. And I don't mean with your partner. I mean actually in a pastoral nature sense. It sounds gorgeous, and the fishing and the hunting and the outdoors and the purity of it. What do you miss from what might be called the real world?
Yeah, it's definitely not, like, there is a romantic element to it. It's definitely not all romance. You know, it's got its blood and muck and gore and...
Yeah.
I definitely wouldn't want to over-romanticise that element of things. Like, what do I miss? I probably miss Match of the Day sometimes. I'm a recovering Man United fan.
And how would you hear about a result? Would you hear from your neighbour passing by on his way to lunch, Paddy?
He wouldn't be more into the GAA.
Yeah, all right, but would he tell you about a big result? You know, because
With GAA results, he'd be in, he'd be giving me guff if Donegal lost.
And great. So he's your Twitter
he's
or your
Twitter account,
your newspaper.
The feed keeps coming as well if it's through Hurling or GAA. I have an English friend who lives up the road, and he'll come down the odd time and give me a bit of grief over Man United losing or something, you know, and I'll.
And how about, like, if Donald Trump gets elected, or Leo Varadkar becomes Taoiseach, or, you know, there's Brexit. Yeah. Do you just hear about that through osmosis, or, I mean, how does that work?
I try to avoid, especially Brexit, as much as possible, because it
must be quite easy for you to avoid Brexit.
Very easy, actually, yeah. you do pick up stuff as you go along. Like, you know, you'll overhear a conversation.
Yeah.
Something about Kim Kardashian or something, or, you know, and you wonder why.
What is that?
Yeah, like, why is the fascination with?
Yeah.
And you'll obviously hear Brexit and stuff, but, like, I try to pay as little attention to that as possible. I find that it just distracts me from the here and now, you know, the things that are immediately around me.
How do you work without flushing toilets and everything? Obviously, people are dying to know how you manage that end of the hygienic world.
Yeah. So if it's a pee, I just go under tree, as we used to do. For something more serious than that, I use a compost toilet.
Beautifully put. Yeah. Now, what is a compost toilet?
It's some people will know them from festivals. Slightly different at festivals usually, but it's basically a bucket with it looks like a normal toilet. It's got a toilet seat.
Okay.
And you just put in some sawdust or some grass or whatever on top instead of water.
Yeah.
And then eventually you empty the compost toilet into a compost bay. Leave that for maybe a year and a half, and then you can use that to grow plants, grow fruit, grow veg.
So full circle.
Go full circle, yeah. So you're basically eating your own shit.
Again, beautifully put, because people might often say that to you as an insult, but actually you'll tacitly agree to it.
Yeah, I think it's something really important. It shows a different cycle of life, you know.
For sure. And is there an odour issue there, or how do you conquer that?
I think if you were doing it the very first time, it can be quite pungent. You know, it's not normal for most people. Yeah. And not the toilet itself, when you're emptying it into the compost bin.
Yeah.
The toilet itself is completely smell-free, you know, as long as you manage it properly.
And the compost then is far enough away.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. And when you empty it in first, there's a bit of a smell. And if you're not used to it, it takes a bit of getting used to. I wouldn't notice it.
Of course, because you mentioned you're teaching the course in Clochjordan, and you write a newspaper article as well, which you don't type or send by email or anything like that. How do you get around that?
I handwrite the articles and then I send it into The Guardian, and then some poor bugger there has got to type it up, I think. do my dirty work for me.
And do all the editing or whatever, but you handwrite it and send it in, and that's...
Post it in, yeah.
But that's the point, isn't it, of what you're doing. It would be kind of self-defeating if you suddenly started emailing in articles like that.
Exactly, yeah.
How did you write the book?
Again, handwritten, which for me was a very interesting process in that... before I used to do machine writing, as they call it, you know. It's a wholly different way of thinking, like a different quality of thought.
Yeah.
So I'd be in front of the fire in the cabin, you know, and I might not write for an hour and a half first, just literally ponder. And then in the next hour, I could write 1,500 words, you know. There's an old carpenter thing to say, like, which is good advice, actually, measure twice, cut once. Right. And with writing, I now say, think twice, write once.
Do you believe that you've become more philosophical about the world, and because you have the time and the space and in the natural environment, than you would have if you were living in an apartment somewhere in Dublin or Galway or Limerick?
Yeah, I definitely feel quite privileged in that sense. Well, privilege is the wrong word. If you've seen how I lived, it wouldn't be most people's idea of privilege. But
there's a lovely quote from you, which is that you moved from wanting to save the world to wanting to savour the world. Is that working?
That's definitely working, yeah. I think when I started off on this path, I was kind of coming from a place of, you know, from the effects that technology's having on, like, kids, on adults, on culture, on society, on the natural world.
Yeah, it's grim.
That kind of save the world mentality, you know.
And did you, was this all triggered by an event or a series of events?
I think probably when I was, because I studied economics and business, and kind of gone into managing a company in England. And I remember coming out of the shop one day and just looking around me. This was like the most radical kind of organic shop in the whole country. And I come out and it was just wall-to-wall plastic. I thought, well, if this is what sustainability means, then I'm in the wrong game, you know? Yeah. There's got to be something deeper to our relationship with the natural world than that. And that kind of forced me down a path of really questioning our entire culture.
And did burnout figure in your life at all in the way we've been talking about it this morning?
I've gone through small periods of, no, I wouldn't say quite burnout, but feeling quite exhausted.
Yeah.
And it's usually at times when I don't really believe what I'm doing anymore. Like when I feel like I'm really tapped into source and tapped into, something that I really believe in. Mm-hmm. Then I feel I don't suffer from burnout at all, because I think you've got like an infinite amount of energy that you can
harness, I suppose.
You can harness, yeah.
You mentioned the sort of the teaching course and the writing, the article, and now the book. Is that your income, or do you collect the dole, or what do you do for a few bob?
Yeah, no dole or anything like that. All my income just comes from writing. The teaching, actually, most of it I do for free. Some of it I charge for.
Do you have a bank account?
I have a bank account, yeah. Like, legally, I have to have a bank account, you know. It's in terms of tax and that kind of stuff, you know.
Okay.
Exempt from the normal things.
So do you have an ATM card and all that sort of thing?
I have an ATM card, but I don't use it. You know, it's very rare that I actually use that, you know.
Yeah, but it's part of, it's probably, these are the unavoidables, maybe.
This is kind of like, this is just dealing with society as it is, you know. It's like just some things that no matter how hard you try, you just can't get out of,
because that's the way. Post office account might suit you better, because you can go in and out with your book that isn't plastic and get the cash, and it's very, very community based. If there is a post office,
I should ask you for some tips after it. I should have thought of that before myself.
I'm probably the last man, because you're so close to it, I'm so far away from it.
No, I should have thought about that before actually. But our post office closed down a few months ago, so
it might not be an option.
Well, I could go to a bigger town, but it's, again, you know, it's just another, it's kind of another 20 kilometres away.
You're going to the UK today?
Tomorrow morning.
And how are you going to get there?
I'll be going sail and rail, so it's kind of over ferry and train.
And is that with a view to not using a plane carbon footprint?
Yeah, I decided, 13 years ago, not to fly again, for various reasons, you know.
Sure.
So I don't fly anymore, but like with the communication side of things, in terms of what I'm doing,
sure,
there are kind of small compromises to be made. You know, I'm speaking into a microphone as I speak here.
I know. And
similarly, I've got to sometimes take a ferry over, I'm not going to swim the channel, put it that way.
And surprisingly, because veganism is so on message these days, you're no longer a vegan, which I don't know why that surprises me, but I suppose it's just because I would have thought that would have been part of the sustainability buzz.
I seem to miss a trend on things. I was a vegan when it wasn't very cool to be vegan, and now I'm not a vegan when it is cool to be vegan. So I seem to have a lifelong habit of missing popular trends. I think I was vegan for 13 years, and I have a lot of admiration for being vegan in the modern world, mm-hmm. because of the impact in terms of animals and the natural world. But I also realised that actually veganism isn't vegan. You know, I take more life gardening in the morning than I do fishing.
Right.
You know, just by upturning the soil. We forget that insects and worms and that whole world of things are creatures as well.
Right.
And so I actually think it's more... it's less impact on the natural world to actually fish. I don't mean bottom trawling fishing, but, you know...
Casting a line,
catching one fish and going home.
All right. No money, says the text. How did he pay for the 3-acre holding? All good and well, but you still need money to start with. There's a question.
Yeah, I was very lucky in that when I'd finished up living without money, which was I'd done for 3 years, I'd written a book in that time, and because the world had collapsed in those years, this was around 2008, 2011, the book had become very popular, which I hadn't really known. I was just told about this after, and there was a pot of cash at the end of it. And so I wanted to use that cash in keeping with how it was done, because no matter what happened, there was royalties there, whether I accepted them or not. So I wanted to set up the place in Galway where, you know, we've got a free hostel and people can come and stay for free.
Where is the hostel? People would love to know.
It's in the nearest town is Loughrea.
Okay.
But that's about 20k away. I'm not sure I want 100,000 people descending on the place tomorrow, but...
It's free.
It's free,
You might have 150,000 people descending on the place tomorrow.
Yeah, that could be moving out next week.
How many rooms have you got?
There's actually one dorm room, and then there's a main room, bedroom, and it can sleep about 15.
Okay.
But I wouldn't hope for 15 people every night.
I understand.
I definitely wouldn't have the peaceful, quiet life.
No, you sure wouldn't. Living off the grid is all very well and idyllic if you're on your own or in a small community, but if you live in a city with millions of other people, it's not very practical unless you want to live in somewhere like medieval London. I've taken 4 headache tablets this morning trying to get ready for work. That idea of living off the grid sounds perfect. Another, how interesting. Does he read or keep up to date with current affairs? We talked about that. Stephen Malahide. In a life without money, how did he get as far as you today? How'd you get here today, in other words? But you do have a few quid. I mean, you're in fairness to you, you're not like some sort of zealot saying, I will not touch and I will not do. You do see that there are certain practicalities required to get you through a given life. So would that be fair?
Yeah, I probably used to be a zealot actually back 10 years ago, you know, when I was living without money. It's slightly different now in that I use a very minimal amount.
Yes.
I use, in terms of travel, my kind of hierarchy is walk, cycle or hitch, you know. So if I've got to go a distance and there's kind of time pressures, like getting here for 9 o'clock today, you know, I'll hitch because I don't.
Did you hitch?
Well, not today actually, because I had to come from Glasgow. I had an event in Glasgow.
Oh, I see.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a mad world the last few weeks.
I can imagine. And did you get a ferry back from Glasgow?
I get a ferry back. Yeah.
Does he have a cat or a dog as a companion? Does he have wild pets that connect with him? That's with, obviously, with you.
Don't know if you could have a wild pet. Kind of a bit of a contradiction in terms of...
But do you have a few regulars? Do you know what I mean?
Like
there's, yeah, like there's be a robin would come to the bird feeder all the time. And you go, how's it going? And, you know, do you have some of those?
Yeah, I definitely... you get to know all the birds, actually. You realise that they're not just a generic bird. They've all got personalities. And over time, you kind of... And if one doesn't come back, you kind of miss them.
There you go. Mairead in Donal says, thank you for sharing your story, Mark. We had a lovely time with you when you came to stay with us. Ayla and Ria will write you a letter very soon. And that's from Mairead in Donal.
Oh, wow.
So they're saying hello to you this morning. I think your writer guest who is living at one with the landscape around him is an amazing guy, says Orla in Cork. In a world gone mad with people addicted to social media, we could all learn a lot from him. If we all tried, even in little ways, to try to respect nature and change our ways with everyday modern living, like food, waste and the likes, your guest should go around to schools, as it will be very beneficial for teenagers. And one asks, what's his plan for old age when injury or sickness happens? Will you allow modern medicine into your life if needs be?
I could sit here now and say, like, I'll take the hardcore line and not, but then you never know how you're going to react when you're faced with your own mortality. So I'd be lying if I said that I definitely wouldn't consider that, you know. I think it's a very important question. It's like a relationship with death has a big impact on how we live.
Yes.
You know, and I think we need to ask a lot of questions about our relationship with that.
Do you pray? Question from a text.
I'm not religious in the conventional sense, you know, like you could describe prayer as anything, I suppose, you know, like...
Are you spiritual?
I think we're all spiritual, whether we know it or not. There's an element of spirituality, like we're part physical, part spirit. I feel like I've got a connection with the landscape I'm living in.
If you're trying to find a pike and you can't find it, you're hours at it going, where's the pike? Would you ever say, dear God, or do you say, dear whoever? Whatever is out there, give us a dig out here. I'm looking for a fish.
I would find myself actually sometimes whispering to somebody who I don't know who it is.
That's it. I think that a lot of us do that sometimes.
So we grew up that way as well, you know. And I think we do feel like there's some other power in the world.
Sure. Would you like to marry and have children? Somebody wants to know. I don't know if that's an invitation, but it's certainly a question.
In terms of marrying, I've no strong feelings on it. You know, if I met somebody who wanted to get married, you know, then... but I think myself and my current partner don't really...
Early days, isn't it?
Early days, exactly.
Mark, in fairness, we'll get you out of that corner.
Yeah,
and
thanks very much.
I'm in a car and I cannot leave, says a text, because this guy and his Galway home is the most fantastic story. Well done to him. He's so eloquent. I could listen to him all day. Cannot wait to buy his book for my husband, who would adore to live like this and who sometimes goes for 2 days of the outdoor life on an island alone and then back to reality. Good luck to him. Great interview. And that's where we're going to leave it. Mark Boyle, author of The Way Home, Tales from a Life Without Technology. What a book for our times. So intriguing, given the amount of noise in a given day. Will you come and see us again, Mark? I really enjoyed talking to you today.
Love to.
Yeah.
And we have a launch in Hodges Fidges, I think on the 18th, Thursday the 18th.
Yeah, you're going to be talking about your book with Moncon McGann, another great guy, on Thursday 18th of April in Hodges Fidges on Dawson Street here in Dublin at 6:30. Tickets are free, but you need to book at eventbrite.ie. That's B-R-I-T-E for details. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Ryan.
Safe travels. Bye. Boat and by foot, but not
whatever.
By plane. Okay, got it. It's 7 minutes to 10. Back with more after this.